Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for Tuesday, December 10th. It's just moments away. But before we get into that, we'd like to thank the following unions for sponsoring this program. First, it's the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 and District 8. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, and of course, today's Ben Jarofsky Show is brought to you by our good friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor. The Ben Jarofsky Show!
Don't know much about history. Hey, don't know much biology. Come on, everybody. Brianna, you too. Don't know much about science books. And something about French. French is in that song.
Starts now. It is Tuesday, December 10th, and live from the Chicago Sun-Times Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, Mr. Bike Dave Glowatz is back. He's actually right here to talk all things local politics, and I promise you, he did ride his bike. And it's an end-of-the-year recap with Democratic political strategists Lori Glenn and Juanita Irizarry. And now your host, Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Mr. Bike shows up early Tuesday, and here's why. Actually, that's not what I was calling it, but Mr. Bike walked in. I'm so excited. I love it when my guests show up, D, and I love it even more when they show up early. Anyway, that's not what I was going to talk about right now. I'm going to talk about, well, let's first start with the obvious thing. It's Tuesday, so I'm going to say what I always say. I had a great week. Did you have a good weekend, Dr. D?
Yeah, had a great weekend. Three days ago.
You want this, Mr. Bike to look at you?
Yeah, Mr. Bike, I need you to sit at this chair here.
Yeah, sit at that chair, right, Mr. Bike?
Something going on with your mic on that one.
Yeah, there's something going wrong with your mic, and I don't know what it is. Anyway, I had a great weekend. I just want to say I saw Ford versus Ferrari, which it's kind of inappropriate to talk about since it's a movie about cars, and Mr. Bike is in the studio, and he doesn't have a car. He doesn't drive a car. He won't even look at a car. He only rides a bicycle. Ring, ring, ring. But I saw Ford versus Ferrari. You see Ford versus Ferrari yet, D?
No. Oh, who won? That. Ferrari?
Well, if I tell, it'll be like giving it away.
Okay, although no spoilers.
It was a historical event. So it's sort of like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like the thing actually happened in the movie. There was a showdown between Ford and Ferrari back in Le Mans in the 60s. I love it when they race around there. Christian Bale. I love Christian Bale. Great movie. Had a really... enjoyed watching it, but then woke up, had to get down to business, D. Lots of news in the world that I had to deal with and confront. The Justice Department, they cleared the FBI and its investigation, and the investigation of the FBI's investigation of Donald Trump. I'll tell you what, Republicans, I got to tip my hat to the Republicans. They are so slick. When their people do something wrong, they get the feds to investigate the feds who are investigating their people who do something wrong.
I'm lost.
It's like they can never do anything wrong. It's only, the lawmen, they're bad. They're bad people. They did something wrong. Donald Trump, you know what? Hats off to Donald Trump. And he's got the Chicago Tribune Board of Editorial people. They go along with it. Johnny Cass, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, he goes along. Well, the feds must have done something wrong if they investigated Donald Trump. But so it's nice to see that the Justice Department cleared the FBI for wrongdoing in the investigation of Donald Trump, which won't, of course, stop any of these Republicans from saying that Donald Trump is an innocent victim of overreach by the government. Where were they in 1969 when the feds shot Fred Hampton in his sleep, hiding under the bed? By the way, I just want to say that was an excellent interview we did with Flint Taylor, and we dropped it on Sunday D, right? I urge everybody, not now, but later, check that out. That's fascinating historical perspective. Flint Taylor talking about the FBI teaming up with the state's attorney and Chicago police in 1969, killing Fred Hampton while he was sleeping. Anyway, I'm waiting for the federal investigation into that. It's not going to happen anytime soon. Other news, the Democrats are about ready. They may be doing this as I speak. Passing their articles of impeachment against Donald Trump. So we'll be talking a lot about that tomorrow with Monroe. And still feeling a fallout of Hillary Clinton's interview on the Howard Stern Show. I wrote a column about it. Really upset about that. I really feel huge levels of ingratitude on the part of Hillary Clinton toward Mr. Bernie Sanders and all the efforts he made to try to get her elected back in 2016 over Donald Trump. And it exposes just this division between what, for lack of a better term, the Hillary and Bernie factions of my beloved Democratic Party. And I really do believe that the Hillary side of the Democratic Party has got to get over it already. All right. Still blaming Bernie for the 2016 election, as opposed to looking at all the other real reasons why Hillary did not win.
You're reeling in the listeners today. Hats off to Donald Trump and bashing the Hillary supporters. All right. Here we go.
And so what else? Oh, I want to tell you about this conversation. I had a good dear friend with mine named Danny. That's not his real name, but I'm going to conceal his real name because we'll wait till you hear what the conversation was about. Danny's a very smart, very creative guy. He's an artist. But I mentioned in passing while we were chatting about this, that, and the other thing, Mayor Pete. And he said, who? And I said, Mayor Pete, Pete Buttigieg, Dennis's favorite presidential candidate, the mayor. He's just doing that to see if he's paying attention. The mayor of South Bend, Indiana, 37-year-old, doing very well in the polls. Is one of the top three candidates in Iowa. I think he's one of the top three candidates in New Hampshire.
And one of the top three candidates in your heart. right, Ben?
Not really. Anyway, and he said, what? Who? Huh? Point is, he'd never heard of Mayor Pete before. And I suddenly realized once more time that the world is divided into people who obsessively follow politics, the kind of people who listen to my show, and just the great mass of humanity that's not really paying attention. And Dee, I was trying to tell this to you before we got started. I really shouldn't
I wasn't paying attention. Repeat that, please.
Judgment of Danny or anybody else who does not know who Mayor Pete is, because as you remember, I did not know who Billie Eilish was. Okay, remember that? I was riding my bike to work, and I saw Billie Eilish's picture on a sign outside the United Center, meaning she was going to have a concert at the United Center. And I came into the studio and go, Dee, have you ever heard of Billie Eilish? Did you know who she was?
No, I don't think so.
You knew who she was. Mm-mm. So I looked her up in the internet. I discovered she's one of the biggest, most successful pop singers in America today. She has like 200 million downloads of a video that she released. So I was really ignorant for not knowing who she was. And the only reason I knew who she was is I happened to be riding my bike by the United Center and saw her picture out. And it occurred to me that there's a tremendous gap between me and the rest of humanity.
It took you long enough.
Like, if you're already playing at the United Center and I haven't heard you are, I'm really behind the times, D. The same thing happened to me at one time at a Wrigley Field concert. I was walking past Wrigley Field, and all these people with cowboy hats were going into Wrigley Field. So Wrigley Field, if you play at Wrigley Field, that means you're a pretty big superstar. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, who's playing here? It was a country western singer, Jason something or
Al Dean.
Yeah, I never heard of the guy.
Not surprised.
I'm like, oh man, I'm so bad. I never heard of Jason Al Dean. But you've heard of Jason Al Dean, but you hadn't heard of Billie Eilish.
No.
So anyway,
now I know who she is, but back then I didn't know Billie Eilish.
For 10 trivia points, which one of our guests was really...
Leah. It was our intern.
Yeah, she knew who Billie Eilish... Ben, you don't know who Billie Eilish... In fact, for a long time, I thought it was Billie Eilish.
Leah, we miss you, by the way.
Yeah, we really do miss Leah. Leah, I hope you're... Ben, she could be coming back for...
Don't tease me.
Okay. Billie Eilish... I guess it was Leah who knew who it was, but there was a guest who would give me a hard time. Anyway, I should not be upset that there are people out there who are not paying attention to the Democratic primary to replace Donald Trump. As important as that primary may be to me, as important as it may seem to me and Mr. Bike and you, Dr. D, to see Donald John Trump defeated in this next election, I have to come to terms with the fact that there are people who are not paying attention in any way, and to the point where they do not know who Mayor Pete is. All right. So I shouldn't get on my high horse and talk about it. I shouldn't talk about the ignorance of the American voter. I shouldn't talk about the ignorance of the Chicago voter, which is something I'll probably be talking about in a little while, because the Sun-Times had one of my favorite articles where Fox nabs top spot. We'll get into that in a little while. The lottery determining who gets where on a ballot, which is really a confession that the voters are utterly ignorant about the whole electoral process. So you know what, D? Instead of saying all those things, I'll say, you know what? If I don't know who Billie Eilish is, it's sort of acceptable that a very smart, very creative friend of mine named Danny did not know who Mayor Pete was. And so it's onward and upwards. All right, D? I learned who Billie Eilish is. I am determined, as we head into the next year, to educate the public about all the Democratic candidates in the process to defeat Donald Trump. In the meantime, we got a great show today. Yes, Mr. Bike is in the studio. Yes, he rode his bicycle.
Mr. Bike, Mr. Bike, come on, yeah. Mr. Bike.
Yes, he figured out how to get on the elevator and up here. He had a really great day, and I cannot wait. He's got all sorts of clips. No bike talk. We're not allowed to talk bikes. He's not going to ring his bell. What is that sound? I think that's the bell.
I think
that's
the geek meter from last week.
I think the geek meter. The geek meter will be set off a lot by Mr. Bike. By the way, Mr. Bike, I just want to tell you, I tried to promote the segment on Facebook. I said, you know what? I'm going to discover my inner millennial. I'm going to promote the segment on Facebook. So I did a link to Lori Glenn. Lori Glenn will be a guest later on the show. Juanita Irizarry, she'll be a guest later on the show. So I did links to them on Facebook, but I couldn't do a link to you because guess what? You're not on Facebook. So
that's correct.
That's facebook.com/insidegov. That's inside GOV.
Wait, time out. You're not in there as Mr. Bike or Dave Glowatz?
Inside Chicago.
He's promoting. Look at that. He's on a different thing. D, you should have known that. Anyway, let's go back in.
And facebook.com/bikertricks. For urban bikers.
Wait, time out.
So
you look at it, won't see a picture of you?
Correct.
Okay. Well, you're all right. Well, all right. I will know that in the future. Biker's tricks. Uh-oh.
What the hell is that?
That's the geek meter.
It's too cold to stand outside and take the bell off of my handlebar, so I recorded it.
Oh, okay. I love it. But I love when he rings the bell. Ding, ding.
It loses something in the digitization, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Dave has a whole bunch of tape. A whole bunch of recordings from last week's city council meeting where they passed the budget. We're going to take the deep dive in the budget. So all the people out there who are ignorant and don't know what's going on, you're going to learn stuff today, all right? Maybe you'll even learn who Mayor Pete is. Anyway, so great show today. Plenty of political discussion. But before we do any of that, the young man from Alton, the pride and joy of the 618, the man they call the doctor with the news.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? Having a good Tuesday? I'm Dennis. Let's find out what's happening in Chicago and or Illinois this afternoon. By the way, not knowing Billie Eilish is way different than not knowing Mayor Pete. Billie Eilish, not running for president.
That's true. But she has 108. D, she has a song that has I can't remember the name of the song, but it's a song she performed on Jimmy Fallon's show. I learned that. Okay.
You are so hip.
I know, man. With Alicia Keys. She sang it with Alicia Keys. So these are the things that are out there that people are talking about in America. They're hanging around a water cooler talking about these things. They're talking about Billie Eilish. They're talking about Alicia Keys. They're talking about Jimmy Fallon. And they're not talking about Mayor Pete. And I'm like, you should be talking about Mayor Pete. You should talk about the future of the world. And then when Mayor Pete's on Jimmy Fallon show, or anybody's on the Jimmy Fallon show, they like joke around. You know what I'm saying? Oh, let's not talk about it.
And we're pretty
issues.
Close to as many followers as Billie Eilish on YouTube, right?
She's at 184 million on that latest.
We're getting there.
We're like, we each have the number one. In our group, okay? We got a ways to go before we catch up to Billie Eilish.
All right, let's find out what's happening in Chicago and or Illinois this afternoon. A lot of Mayor Lightfoot news to discuss. Ooh. So before we get all caught up in all of that, let's begin with our Democratic Illinois governor. Today, Governor J.B. Pritzker is at the Leuna Training Center, and that's capital L, lowercase I for some reason, and then capital UNA. That stands for Laborers International Union of North America. He was there to do, well, what he always does, sign legislation. Okay. Typical Pritzker.
Well, that's what you want him to do. I mean, he's better than the last governor we had. Remember, he would veto legislation and say, harumph.
This legislation calls attention to workforce diversity when it comes to the Rebuild Illinois Capital projects. Later on, he'll join in the 40th anniversary celebration of the Illinois Human Rights Act being held at Carpenter's Hall. In statewide news, the state of Illinois has begun taking applications today for those looking to get in the legal recreational marijuana game. Regulators are taking applications for new recreational marijuana retail store owners. Applications to open up to 75 new adult-use cannabis dispensaries beyond the ones already approved by the state will be taken from 9:30 a.m. this morning to 4 p.m. this afternoon on business days today through January 2nd at the Office of the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation in the Thompson Center in downtown Chicago. So that's why all those people are at Thompson Center today, Ben. I know you're complaining.
I did not realize there were a whole bunch of people at the Thompson Center. You know, I've been thinking about this, D. You talk about recreational marijuana, the legalization of marijuana. I'm going to write a column coming up because I'm coming to the realization. I know this sounds really weird coming from me. I'm a little embarrassed to admit it, but I'm at the point. I'm at the point where I don't want it legalized anymore. All right. I want marijuana to go back to being illegal.
Because your dealer's going to raise prices. Yeah.
That's Mr. Bike weighing in. Dave Glowatz. It's a long, complicated story, I need psychiatric help, like something I really want in the world. When I finally get it, then I don't want it anymore. I need it. That's a cry for help, Mr. Bike. But the other thing is just the whole way we're going about it. My main criticism of the war on drugs, and particularly the fact that marijuana was illegal, is that black people got arrested for something that white people did. So now we've legalized, and guess what? Everybody making money off it is a rich white guy. And it's just like we're just plowing ahead with this process, just making rich people, the same people who just pretended as though these inequities didn't exist when they were locking up black people for the things that white people did, the same people who were smoking reefer and then going, oh my God, pretending they weren't, the same people who were the utter freaking hypocrites that irritated me so much when marijuana was illegal are now going to be benefiting from it, from the legality of it. And that just irritates me to no end.
You and the black caucus in the city council.
Yes. Words I never thought would come out, but yes, I see eye to eye with the black caucus of the city council. Black caucus usually is very favorable in their attitude toward Mayor Rahm and Mayor Daley. But in this particular point, I'm with Jason Urban 100%. Alderman Jason Urban, the pride and joy of the 28th Ward. I'm with him 100%. So it's like the utter hypocrisy of the war on drugs has been replaced by the utter hypocrisy of the legalization of marijuana. And I say, let's just go back to making it illegal. But with this little caveat, all right? When I speak Latin. This little caveat. This little caveat. No one should be arrested for it. How about that? It's illegal, but no one should be arrested for it. And Dr. D's dealer and Mayor Bike's dealer can...
Mayor Bike!
Thanks for the promotion. I'm sure I want the job. It's like Eddie Johnson, right? He didn't want the job, but he got it anyway.
Oh my God, we haven't.
I'm sorry, I brought up Eddie Johnson.
Oh my God, I am utterly obsessed with Eddie Johnson.
What do you name the scandal of Eddie Johnson? What's it called?
Johnson Gate or Eddie Gate.
All right, say there was a scandal in the Chicago Water Department. What would you call that?
Watergate.
Confusing.
Catch these two at Zanies this weekend. You guys are
anyway, so D, I'm just saying it. You know what? It's so hypocritical. The hypocrisy, I guess it was the hypocrisy of the war on drugs was the second worst thing about the war on drugs. The first worst thing was all the people who were arrested and thrown into jail, whose lives were ruined. But the utter hypocrisy of it was just too disgusting to take, and now we've just replaced one hypocrisy with another. So that's all I got to say on the subject, D. Right. Let's make marijuana illegal again.
But
no one can be arrested.
You really got to put that second part in there.
No, the second part. No arrests, okay? We should pass a law. Nobody can be arrested for possessing reefer or smoking reefer. How about that?
All right, on to the Chicago news. No public event scheduled today for Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, Benny J, Mr. Bike Dave Glowatz. It's a cold December afternoon in the city of Chicago. What do you guys think Lori Lightfoot is doing right now?
Having lunch.
Oh, okay.
Luncheon.
Right. A luncheon. What do you say, Mr. Bike?
She's going over a recording of her interview with Mayor Pete.
Oh, very good.
Did you go to Segway school? Because that was a perfect segue. Because
I've never been on a Segway.
About that Q&A forum Lori held in Iowa with 2020 presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg. Our show ended Friday before we could talk about it. And hey, way to go, Mayor. Lori put political pressure on Pete.
She grilled him.
Yeah, she even made national headlines. The following comes from CNN.com. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot pressed presidential hopeful Pete Buttigieg to break his non-disclosure agreement with the elite consulting firm that once employed him as the crowded 2020 Democratic race progresses toward the Iowa caucuses. Lightfoot asked the South Bend, Indiana mayor, quote, shouldn't you break that NDA with McKinsey and company so that you have the moral authority and the high ground to get somebody like President Donald Trump, who hides behind the lack of transparency, to justify everything he's doing?
Wait, time out. Is that a quote of what Lori said? That's the exact quote?
I believe so. Yeah.
Dang, Lori, that's a good question.
All right, we have the audio here. Shout out to CNN. Ben, prepare to vomit in 3, 2, 1.
You said you can't talk about your work at McKinsey because of a non-disclosure agreement. And you think said today that you got to honor your commitment to McKinsey. I'm asking you, shouldn't you break that NDA so that you have the moral authority and the high ground against somebody like Trump, who hides behind the lack of transparency to justify everything that he's doing?
So no. Here's what I'm doing. First of all, I just pushed out a bunch of information about each of the engagements that I did when I was at McKinsey. This is my first job out of school. It's not like I was the CEO. I was making a lot of spreadsheets and PowerPoints. But people ought to know from somebody who proposes to be the president of the United States what's in your past. And just as I have considered it important to release all of the tax returns from when I first entered the private sector, something not all of my competitors have been willing to do, I also think it's important for my client work to be out there too. So I've pushed as much information as I can without breaking the promise that I made in writing. And I am asking my former employer to do the right thing, to not make me choose between claiming the moral high ground and going back on my word.
Yeah, but they're not going to, right? Tonight. And NDAs are courts across the land have said that they're not enforceable. You should break the NDA.
I'm going to give him a chance to do the right thing, and then we'll take it from there.
Dang, Lori!
I think that was a good equivocation on Mayor Pete's part, too.
That, you mean ducking and dodging? Listen, man.
He didn't say, no, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, no, he... All right, I know you're a huge Mayor Pete fan, but let's just put that aside.
I like Indiana, but...
Our listeners can't see it, but he brought in a Mayor Pete poster.
Yeah.
Under the table. Don't show him.
Wait, can I just give a shout out to Lori Lightfoot? I've been kind of hard on Lori since she the last couple months, but that was, I could not agree more with Mayor Lori Lightfoot. She was absolutely correct. Mayor Pete hiding behind that NDA or non-disclosure agreement that he signed when he was a kid out of college with that consultant firm, McKinsey, is the equivalent of Donald John Trump saying he can't release his taxes because he's being audited. In other words, Trump is worse, I guess, because he just made it up. There's no rule that says you can't release your taxes because you're audit. But yeah, I agree with Lori Lightfoot 100%. There's no reason for him. That NDA was signed 10 years ago. What, are they going to sue him? They're going to take him to court? McKinsey's going to take Mayor Pete to court. We're taking you to court because you violated an NDA you signed when you were like 22. And yeah, you should release it because these part of the reason the Democrats have so little credibility on the national level with my friends of the Bernie Sanders persuasion is because there's so many consultant groups like McKinsey who are always advising them to try to like betray their values that made them Democrats in the first place by coming up with these little slick PR slogans that divert from real interests that affect people like the need for health care for all. And so the fact that he worked for that organization back in, when was it, 2010 or 2011, whenever he was working for them, is a source of irritation and concern to many Democrats of the Bernie leftist persuasion. And so Lori Lightfoot's absolutely correct. Tell people what you did for them and stop hiding behind this what kind of firm asks its employees to sign NDAs anyway? Like, who do you think you are?
Did the Sun-Times ask you to do that before you got this gig?
Are you? That's a joke, right?
The joke?
Like, why would anybody ask me to sign an ND? Nobody asked me to
this
sign.
This is like those FBI, what do they call those things when they...
Nobody asked, just so people know, that was a joke. Nobody asked me to sign an NDA.
That's correct.
Thank you.
What are those security letters that people get, like, when there's a national security inquiry that the FBI makes, and they make it to you, and they say that you're required by federal law not to disclose that we gave you this letter. So you can't admit that you had you're dealing with the FBI on this. This is a...
I do not know what you're referring to, but I don't see...
This exists.
It exists. I believe it exists.
I'm just saying, you could have signed something to the Sun-Times, but you were required to say that you didn't sign it.
I did not sign anything, anytime, from anybody. My beloved Bright One didn't ask me to sign anything. The Reader didn't ask me to sign anything.
Or that's what you have to say.
Oh my God, he's tricked me, Dr. Bike, or Mr. Bike. No, I didn't sign anything. Nobody asked me to say I'd sign something when I didn't sign it.
Sure.
And I don't understand why... Any firm like McKinsey would ask anybody who worked for them to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And I further don't think it should be binding now, 10 years later, when Mayor Pete is running for president. And I don't blame anyone of the Bernie Sanders persuasion for being upset that Mayor Pete will not release the information. And kudos to Lori Lightfoot for asking that question.
Non-disclosure agreement. That's what it is.
Yes.
Been wondering the whole time you guys were talking.
I'd like to hear some more audio of Lori Lightfoot in the courtroom. You know, like what is she like when she's dealing with witnesses? I bet it would be interesting.
Was Lori Lightfoot now?
She's a federal prosecutor.
Utter ignorance here. How many times was she in a federal courtroom in the last like 10 years?
I don't know the number, but she was in there.
Mm-hmm. That was a good question. She came at him hard, and Mayor Pete's response along the lines of habita, habita, habita.
All right, enough about Friday's news, because the mayor's looking ahead, really far ahead. In fact, a whole decade ahead.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, she knows it's a 4-year term, right? With the Chicago teacher strike and that city budget in the rear view for now, it's time to discuss what's next for our Chicago mayor. On Monday, Lightfoot announced what the Lori PR team and Illinois Politico are calling her, quote, next big thing. It's her 10-year plan to grow Chicago's economy. The mayor detailed her plans during a speech Monday, and her plan calls for growing four different sectors. And Ben, say what you will, when we're done with this story,
one,
at least
1, 2, 3, 4 got it.
He's a counter. And Ben, yeah. Say what you will, when we're done with this story, at least none of the four involve marijuana or casinos. We were starting to look a little desperate there for a minute, just begging casinos and pot to bail us out of our problems. But here they are. We start with number one. TDNL, which stands for transportation, distribution, and logistics.
Oh, I thought the L was love.
Aw. No.
That's number five.
Number two. Wait. Yeah.
Number two.
Technology.
Wait, wasn't the T? Oh, the T and the it was transportation.
Keep
technology up,
Benny. Number three. Tourism.
Oh, there's another T.
I know. And yeah, it looks like number four is also on here as well, but it was mentioned in the first
number
one.
Number four.
Logistics.
Logistics
is in it twice. It's
Wait,
really
what
important.
Is logistics? Really important. What is logistics?
It's when you have, you're connecting things to other things. Like City Colleges has a logistics specialty at one of its schools where it hooks people up to careers in like warehousing, you know, or...
But no, logistics is a growth industry. So that's a growth industry?
Yeah, because in large urban areas like Chicago, you have all these logistics centers that are in the periphery and the suburbs where the stuff comes in by plane and then they put it on, you know, Amazon Prime vans and they bring it into the city. So all that interface between when it goes from one mode to another is called logistics.
Wait, time out. What are you literally bringing?
Products. What was the last thing you ordered on Amazon?
I've never ordered anything on Amazon.
Bad example then.
That's actually not true. I sit corrected. About 5 years ago, I ordered a book on Amazon, and then I vowed never to do it again. Sit corrected.
Some people I live with get stuff every
day. So you're saying logistics is the delivery of goods through on an online service like Amazon.
That's one aspect of it.
And so that's a growth industry. So you get people to work in the warehouses and distribution centers.
Yeah.
I think there's more growth out of reefer, be honest with you.
Thank God he came here early. All right.
A lot of logistics here.
Lightfoot said success in building these industries hinges on one thing. Population growth.
Yes.
Yes, we need even more hipsters in Logan Square.
Leakage Yards is going to help us with that.
Oh, yeah. They're just going to move the hipsters from Logan Square to Lincoln Yards. They're not creating new hipsters.
Here's the quote from,
I'd like that.
Here's the quote from Lightfoot. Quote, we will not be able to progressively develop the city revenues we need unless we attract, retain, and grow our population. She called on help from members of the Economic Club Monday to get this 10-year plan rolling, saying to the Economic Club, quote, we need your partnership and investment. Less of the former and more of the latter, but seriously, help us out. Lightfoot also got quite an applause during her speech, but it wasn't so much for her 10-year plan. It was when she addressed all this damn dirty Chicago corruption and ethics reform.
Yeah, that's always an easy an applause gather. By the way, I just want to say, I don't know if I need an explanation from Dave about what logistics are. That I think I'm not alone in that one. I just want to go back to when the teachers were on strike, and one of the things they were calling for were more nurses. I don't think anybody needs an explanation of what a nurse is and how important a nurse is and how we need more nurses. But remember so much criticism from corporate Chicago? Oh, we can't afford nurses. But it's a good thing somehow or other when we have a person employed in logistics, but it's not a good thing when we have a person employed in nursing. Just throwing out there, interesting little contrast. I would like to think that like more nurses and social workers and counselors and teachers, firefighters, policemen, real like occupation. I guess I'm just like this old school guy, old guy there, not modern hip like Mr. Bike, who knows what a logistics employee is.
I don't think that qualifies me as hip.
I qualify
as corporate.
Now, I just got finished praising Mayor Lightfoot, and I really did mean that. I thought it was a great question she asked Mayor Pete, and she really held his feet to the fire. But that speech about growing logistics is kind of Mayor Rahm country. Isn't that the kind of thing, Dave, that Mayor Rahm would be talking about?
So you're saying that in some ways the current mayor resembles the former mayor? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes. Wow. I'm not saying Rahm too, like some people would say. But I mean, that's the kind of thing a mayor says. You know, it's like the downtown community. Yeah, we need more logistic workers. That's what we need, more logistics.
Take a chill pill, man.
Oh, thanks, Rom.
So there anyway. You are. Just like that, you're now in the know of what's going on in Chicago and or Illinois. Of course, we'll keep you posted on these stories as today's program rolls along. People, don't go anywhere. The Ben Jarofsky Show is just getting started. And after this short little break, Mr. Bike is here. Hey, ring that, make that bell noise again. This is a bell, guys. This is a bike bell.
That sounds like the nerd meter from last week.
Much more where that came from. Don't go anywhere. The Ben Jarofsky Show will be right back. We are live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
The Ben Jarofsky Show is supported by Northwestern University's part-time master's program in literature and liberal studies. Students learn from dynamic and diverse faculty as they build advanced skills for critical analysis, writing, and research. Evening classes are held on Northwestern's Evanston and Chicago campuses. The spring quarter application deadline is January 15th. Learn more at sps.northwestern.edu/masters.
Read the Chicago Reader to get up to speed on what's what in Chicago. Culture, food, arts and entertainment, weekly concert listings, weekly event listings, the environment, travel. I can continue, but you get the point. And for all of you Chicago political junkies, raw weekly columns on real city politics from Maya Dukmasova and our very own Ben Jarofsky. The Chicago Reader, free to the public in newsstands throughout the city and online at chicagoreader.com. Read it now and be a more informed Chicagoan.
Did you know that 40% of the people in Illinois opt to be cremated? Well, it's true. And Chicagoland Cremation Options honors their wishes by providing cremation services directly to the general public. Chicagoland Cremation Options provides an affordable, ethical, and easy cremation arrangement, whether in person or online. Save thousands and streamline the process by going directly to Chicagoland Cremation Options. It's a family-owned business operated by my good friend, Douglas Klein. Here's how you reach them. Chicagoland Cremation cremationoptions.com. One more time, Chicagoland cremationoptions.com.
Commercial break over. Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Dave Gloetz is in the studio. We call him Mr. Bike because he wears many hats. One of them is a biking helmet. He knows more about biking in the city of Chicago, biking anywhere, than anybody I know.
Lance Armstrong.
He knows more about biking in the city of Chicago than Lance Armstrong.
Lance knows more about doping than I do.
Yes. Dave Gloetz is no dope. So usually when you come on the show, you give me a piece of paper, a cheat sheet to read, and then I act like so knowledgeable. Dave Gloetz is blah, blah, blah. But you didn't give me the cheat sheet. So why don't you tell people what the cheat sheet would say so they know who you are?
Independent journalist Dave Gloetz writes on local government at shygov.com. That's Inside Chicago Government. And other places on Facebook, look for Inside Gov, and on Twitter, CHIGOVT.
And Dave Gloetz, in another lifetime, would come over to my house once a week or once every other week and interview me, talk to me about city politics. It was a blast doing that. We, for how many years did we, 10 years?
Well, we did the podcast for 10 years, or 11, I think. We did 11 years.
Whoa,
but the at the end of which, we transferred to doing it over at the studios of that radio station that you were on.
Oh, I can't remember the name of it. You think I would remember?
It was WCPT 820. But listen, Dave, that's really interesting. Like, you were doing like podcasts before podcasts were like a thing, it seems like, right?
One of my credentials is that I'm the host of the original Ben Jarofsky podcast.
No, right. Yeah, I got to give him credit. It was 2007. I think it was 2007. Yeah. We have a mutual friend, Kevin Lamb, who is best known for being a cheesehead and loving the Green Bay Packers.
He has a problem with that.
He has a lot of issues, and he's trying to confront them. Okay, that cheesehead
thing.
Trying
to confront them with you, actually.
He just sent me a text. He's just so obnoxious. Kevin Lamb, L-A-M-M, when it comes to his beloved Green Bay Packers. Anyway, so he was the one who said, Dave, you should meet Ben, and Ben, you should meet Dave. And I remember I was a TIFF talk.
It was a panel discussion.
Panel discussion on TIFF. And
sponsored by Independent Voters of Illinois, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you were correct. I think Mike Quigley may have been there as well.
Perhaps.
Am I right about that?
Perhaps.
Anyway, Mike Quigley at the time probably would have been a Cook County Board Commissioner. So Dave said, hey, let's do this thing, a podcast. I didn't know what the hell it was. And I said, sure, why not? 10 years later, he would be interrogating me, D. He would interrogate me. All right, now the shoe's on the other foot. Yeah, I'm going to really grill him. So now he's a regular on my show. And Dave, we're going to be talking about the city council, Lori Lightfoot, passing the budget. Dave takes the deep dive. He's got a lot of good audio. But before we do that, I'm gonna grill you. Okay, I'm gonna flip the switch. All right, I'm gonna pretend it's the old days, and you're me, and I'm you. Whoa! And I'm gonna ask you this question. This question was in my beloved Bright One today, home delivered as always, regarding an alder woman from the 39th ward on the city of Chicago, Northwest Side. Samantha Nugent is her name. She's a rookie alderman, and she's upset because the mayor is taking away a TIF that's in her ward, the Irving Park Elston TIF. She's abolishing the TIF, and when the mayor abolishes a TIF district, with the city council needs to vote on it, when the mayor does that, then all the taxes that normally get diverted to the TIF bank account are there for all the taxing bodies. So it's property taxes that, instead of supporting whatever programs are in the TIF, will support the schools and the parks and the libraries, et cetera, and so forth. Alderwoman Samantha Nugent is upset because she wants to use at least some of the $161,904 in the closing balance in this TIF for, quote, ornamental metal signposts to identify the old Irving Park neighborhood she represents. Quote, we're starting to get a lot of restaurants and shops, and we want to help promote that. In your humble opinion, Dave Gloetz, should that $161,904 be used for ornamental metal signposts in the old Irving Park neighborhood? Or should it be used for schools, parks, police, firefighters, et cetera, and so forth? Dave Gloetz, answer that question.
The first thing I would do is look at the redevelopment plan for that TIF district and see if it's covered in the plan.
to see if what's covered in the plan.
What Alderman, I'm sorry, with the city council member Nugent would like to do.
In other words, you're saying something that I wasn't even raising, that the district was created for something other than ornamental signposts, and in fact, she may be using money that was intended for something other than an ornamental signpost on an ornamental
sign. I'm just leaping right up to the balcony view and saying that every TIF district has a document associated with it at its creation called the redevelopment plan, which outlines what the district money is intended to do. And for all we know, that's right in there.
Yeah. So in other words, let's say it was. Let's say, okay, by the way, a bit of an evasion and a duck and a dodge of the question. It was a direct yes or no.
I think I answered your question.
Yes, you did answer the question, but it was a duck and a dodge.
It's like that saying, you know, God answers every prayer, but sometimes the answer is no. Let's move on.
Yeah. So then you're saying, no, she shouldn't be able to spend the money.
No, I was making an entirely different point. But I'm just saying that this might be an intended use of that money, but without looking at that plan, I have no idea.
All right.
So I will answer your question, yes or no. If it's in the plan, then I'd say sure.
Then she should be able to spend it on that, as opposed to kicking it back to the schools, the parks, the libraries, et cetera.
The question for you is $200,000 that the mayor used to rehab her office suite when she came into office. Was that an intended use? What district is that? Is that LaSalle?
I think it's LaSalle District. I think it was $225,000. Don't quote me on that.
So I'm wondering, when they created the redevelopment plan for that TIF district, so they have mayor's office rehab in there?
Well, the point I'm making is that it's not whether the greatest, if you will, sin, to use to follow up on your religious themes, of the program is not so much whether they're following exactly the stipulations,
the plan
to spend the money. It's that they're spending the money on frivolous things that they shouldn't be spending the money on, that the money, there are far more pressing needs that we have.
But what if this is what her constituency wants? Doesn't that have any priority?
So in other words, well, that's an interesting question. So we should put that to the voters of the, so you're saying that if the people of 39th Ward would rather have the money spent on ornamental signposts as opposed to firefighters, police, schools, libraries, that should be the overriding point, and they should be able to spend the money.
TIF is an economic stimulus tool, right?
That's what it's intended to be, yes.
So perhaps the case has been made or could be made that this marketing function of showing the business climate or proclaiming the business climate literally from the street polls is a way to stimulate some economic activity.
Dave Glowatz could not get through that sentence without laughing. I just want the word. But I'll give you credit, man. That is a great, it's a great skill to be able to argue any point and play devil's advocate.
I didn't even go to law school.
I didn't even go. I saw this story and I go, I know there's some people in the city of Chicago who, when they see these ornamental signs, start railing and ranting, what a waste of money. And, you know, I would have to say, in my humble opinion, that I would agree with the mayor on this one. I'd rather the $161,904 go to something other than ornamental metal signposts. To schools, libraries, police, firefighters, etc. It's not, admittedly, it's not a, in the total scheme of things, what's the budget? I'm asking you about that. $8 billion, is that what the budget is?
The number is 11.7. Very good.
Wow, yeah. 11.7. I was only $3 billion off.
0.3 billion.
Yes. Wait, time out. It was
$11.7 billion.
Anyway, all right, I just wanted to see how
actually
you handle that. But your point's a good one. So now, if it's not in the development agreement, if the Irving Park Elston TIF does not have a line item for ornamental metal signposts, do you think the money should go back to the taxing bodies, or should she be allowed to override that?
I think that even before it came to this point, in other words, there was a city council committee meeting that then ended up in the newspaper, that the agency with jurisdiction, namely the Department of Planning and Development, should have had a conversation with Ms. Nugent and said, you know, we're planning to close this TIF district. How are you doing with that? You know, this is a direct result, I think, of the mayor's executive order to try to rein in the things that aldermen were getting away with. I shouldn't say getting away with it. Aldermen were allowed to do that were outside the municipal code. And so she asked, the mayor did in her executive order upon taking office, to identify those things. What are the things that you are letting aldermen do that are not statutorily required, but it's just a custom? So what I'm guessing is that people in the Department of Planning and Development who had the largest number of those things that they reported that they were doing with aldermen are just haven't figured out quite how the collaboration works yet. Hmm. That's what this story is saying to me.
Well, this story is actually, we're going to get into the budget in a little while. This actually ties to the budget story. Essentially, what the mayor is doing is to raise the money to pay for ongoing obligations that she has in this current budget. She's closing TIFs, and so the money that's generally diverted, the property taxes that are diverted to the bank accounts, each individual TIF bank account from which they'll draw to do things like pay for ornamental metal signposts in Old Irving Park, will instead be sent back to taxing bodies like the library, their schools, the city of Chicago, which controls fire and police, the Cook County board, and so
President's Security Detail.
Yeah, so it could go for all things.
Their increased wages.
It could go for all the different items that are covered by the city's budget, the Cook County budget, et cetera, and so forth. And so that's what Lori Lightfoot is doing. And I've seen this actually, Dave, from time to time. Aldermen get upset because they've come to view these little TIF funds as their own little mini, well, they wouldn't call them slush funds, but neighborhood development accounts. That's a nice euphemistic way.
They're very possessive of them.
Yeah. And in fact, in the same Sun-Times article that Frank Spielman wrote, Walter Burnett of the 27th Ward is lamenting. He's siding with Alderwoman Nugent, saying some of the TIFs that are in my ward are TIFs that I initiated to encourage the Department of Planning to put in. So aldermen should be notified and okay with taking them out, Burnett. So he's sympathetic to her. I'm a little less sympathetic to her because I think the money was taken from the schools, the parks, etc., in the first place without proper oversight. And so now they're just sort of kicking it back. But your point is very well taken. Mayor Lori Lightfoot was just like every other, like acting like an alderman when she needed her city offices redone. She just dipped into the TIF slush fund, found $225,000 to fix up her offices. And I remember there was a few years ago, Mayor Daley did the same thing. Wasn't it when he was building a ramp? We talked about this, I think.
A ramp?
A ramp for wheelchairs that went to the city council when they redid the lobby outside the city council chambers.
I know that ramp.
Yeah, they dipped into the good old TIF fund, and Brendan Riley was upset about that one from the 42nd.
Because that's technically in his district. It's his ward. Right?
Yeah, someone's going to dip into that TIF fund. He wants to do the dipping.
By the way, I believe that Ms. Nugent calls herself alderman. As does Pat Dowell, as does Kerry Austin.
Is that true?
Yeah. I could tell, but you just go to her website.
The Sun-Times just wrote ALD, period. My beloved bright one. So anyway, I'm just quoting the great alderwoman, Sue Garza.
Who does call herself that.
She says, and she urges all other women in the city council. So I'm following Sue Garza's lead. All right, you have a bunch of interesting clips that you want to play. I'm going to turn it over to you and lead young Dennis through the playing of his clips, and then we'll analyze them.
Well, as you said a moment ago, the city council passed an $11.65, I think, billion-dollar city budget on November 26th at their meeting. And
yes, that's billion with a B.
and what was the vote on that?
Well, there were about 8 ordinances. It's kind of an arcane thing, is that it's still really difficult, I think, for the average person to go to a city council meeting and figure out what the heck they're talking about.
Yeah.
Even though they have, you know, I have right here the agenda, and it does have eight items on it, all relating to the budget, but none of them actually say this is the city budget. You know, there's the substitute ordinance amending the appropriation. There's a substituted series of amendments. There is the appropriation ordinance. There is various municipal code provision changes. So what basically what it boils down to is there is a revenue budget that defines where we're getting money from, taxes, fees, fines, those things. And then there is a management budget that lays out, here's everything that we're going to spend money on. So there's the revenue side and there's the spending side. So there were two essential roll call votes. There were a bunch of, at large voice votes, but two roll call votes that were key. Mm-hmm. For the appropriation ordinance, where it talks about where's all the money coming from, what's the where the revenues come from, it passed 39-11. And if you'd like the, here's a scorecard.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, for those just listening on the download, ladies and gentlemen, David Glowatz has the documents.
He does. He does have the documents. This is really helpful.
So one of the things to note about that is that it didn't pass unanimously. And this is the vote that's often reported as the one that was the city budget vote, because they packaged about a half dozen ordinances into that one. And if you run down the list, you'll see names like LaSpada, Lopez, Taylor, Rodriguez, Sigcho Lopez, Rodriguez Sanchez, Ramirez Rosa, Vasquez, Martin, Haddon. These are some of the newbies who are so-called progressives. Some are who in a self-proclaimed socialist bloc. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, there were a half dozen people who call themselves socialists that said, they issued a statement ahead of time that's saying, we are voting no on this budget together. They said that. There are a couple of people who are, I think we would agree, not conforming to the socialist moniker, namely Alderman Beal of the 9th Ward,
yeah,
and Alderman Lopez of the 15th Ward, who also voted no on that, mm-hmm, on that thing. The other big roll call vote was essentially one about raising property taxes next year. And I'm sure you've talked about this. This is a big issue, like whether the mayor was going to try to go to that well, mm-hmm, try to raise revenue. And as it turns out, the city is raising property taxes next year to the tune of about $72 million. But only $25 million of that is actually going to result in increase in your bill, my bill, everybody else's property tax bill. The other amount comes from stuff like closing TIF districts, because mm-hmm, now some of this property is being put back into the general revenue stream. So, you know, yay for closing TIF districts. However, because it does raise property taxes, this other ordinance, notice that the vote was 35-15. Mm-hmm. So four more aldermen jumped on. Who jumped on? It was Alderman Hopkins of the 2nd Ward. It was Alderman Napolitano of the 41st, Riley of the 42nd, and Smith of the 43rd. So they get to go
James
back to
Gardner
their,
as well.
Was Gardner in there? Sorry, I see
yes.
that now.
This is an important point that Dave's making. Follow us. Follow him on this one, folks, because it gets a little complicated. There was money appropriated by the city council to pay for all the goodies in the budget. That passed 39-11. Then there was a different vote on raising the property taxes by how much did you say, $20
million? $72 million.
$72 million. That passed 35-15. So... this is a distinction without meaning, but apparently these aldermen and alderwomen wanted to make this distinction. They wanted to say they voted no to literally raising the property taxes, but they what they don't tell you is that they voted to appropriate the property taxes. So I guess there you... I don't know what
they want to be able to say to their constituents, mm-hmm, that I did not vote to raise property taxes, even though the budget is not complete without this additional set of revenue. So they, you know, they came up with some creative ways, which we can talk about in a minute, about how to find to close what the mayor advertised was nearly a $900 billion shortfall in expenditures, anticipated 2020 expenditures versus 2020 income. Mm-hmm. Mayor Hopkins, wow. Alderman Hopkins. Well, everybody's getting Freudian promoted slip. Today. Yeah. First, I'm mayor, now Brian's mayor.
Brian Hopkins, yeah.
He wrote a letter to his constituents where he said, you know, while many arguments were offered, I have the letter right here. While many arguments were offered during the course of debate in support of using a property tax increase to help close the gap, the one I just talked about, I am well aware of the burden that would put on all property owners in the second ward, which is his ward. That's why I have consistently pledged to oppose any increase in the property tax levies. What was that name of that guy who got all these congressmen to make a no new taxes pledge?
Norquist.
Yeah, Norquist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, so it looks, sounds like Hopkins is kind of channeling his own Norquist.
I would like to point something out about Brian Hopkins as your second ward alderman, which is a very bizarrely drawn ward. I would want to say it's on the north side, but it kind of like stretches all over the place. So it's north side, northwest side, etc. He was
from Streeterville to Bucktown.
And very narrow. It's a gerrymandered ward. He was the quarterback, if you will, that led the charge for the Lincoln Yards TIF vote, which, as Dave Glaude knows, raised property taxes throughout the city. So it's interesting that now suddenly he is a champion on behalf of the beleaguered property taxpayers of Chicago. So he's voting no on raising property taxes $72 million, did you say, in this current budget to pay for things like police and firefighters, stuff that we need, but that he was leading the charge to raise property taxes by untold hundreds of millions. I don't even know how much because it's so convoluted when you get into to a TIF, but to approve a handout, what was it, Lincoln Yards is $1.3 billion?
Yeah, $1.3
billion. $1.3 billion. So it's one of those things.
Where you can have your cake and eat it, too.
Thank you. Thank you. Well done. Well done, Mr. Bike.
So let's go on to some of the other, some of these no votes are kind of interesting.
Okay.
I would categorize the no votes as sort of in principle about, you know, there are things we can do better in terms of social justice and so-called progressive revenues that this budget doesn't address. This is a contention by some of the progressive aldermen. And then there were a couple, what I would call very detail-oriented objections that say these particular things in the budget don't work. And the first one I want to highlight is from Alderman Lopez of the 15th Ward. And let's listen to what he had to say.
What we've seen in this budget is that, for starters, it's a violation of the law. This budget is not balanced. This budget isn't just precariously balanced. It's completely unbalanced to the tune of $163 million. If you were to take at face value what this administration has presented, if $163 million doesn't happen, and if the rosy projections laid bare by the administration don't come true, there will be a supplemental ordinance saying property taxes have to go up, or 1,000 positions are finally truthfully going to be cut and not rebranded and refurbished in this budget. Deal with the truth now before we're coming back the end of December to address it then.
Some have raised concerns that this budget is built on revenue projections and assumptions. Every budget is built on revenue projections and assumptions, period. To have a balanced budget, we aren't required to have the revenue today. We simply need to have it in the door during the fiscal year 2020. And when it comes to the $168 million in ambulance reimbursements, municipalities across Illinois, not just the city of Chicago, already receive reimbursements for these services. The difference is that all these municipalities and the city of Chicago have worked together with the governor's administration to see our costs fairly reimbursed.
That was 42nd Ward Alderman Brendan Riley, who was sort of rebutting what Alderman Lopez says. So what they're talking about is in mayor's budget is $163 million that isn't quite a sure thing yet. And what they're talking about is this. Let's say when you leave the studio today, You walk out the front door of the Sun Times building. Some guy runs up, grabs you, and body slams you to the curb, and you hit your head. Not that this is a common occurrence, but I'm just using it as an example.
What an example
to
use.
So then,
whoa, what are you saying? Anyway, let's follow your example.
So a Chicago Fire Department ambulance comes, mm-hmm. takes you to the hospital. Presumably, you're okay. You still live and you're healthy. Then what will happen is the city of Chicago will send you a bill mm-hmm. for that ambulance ride. And it's usually hundreds of dollars. So they charge for that. Well, apparently what's been happening is that with indigent people, they never recover that money mm-hmm. because they don't have it.
Yeah.
So what this part of the budget says it's going to do is they're going to start billing Medicaid for these rides that indigent people are taking, where apparently they had not been billing Medicaid before. And Medicaid is a state-run, federally subsidized, state-run health plan. So apparently the governor is on board with making with providing this revenue, but I guess the federal government has to okay it before it happens. So what Lopez is saying is that the feds haven't approved it, so it's technically not in there yet. And he's going so far as saying, well, that's why this budget is out of balance, and therefore it violates the law. Mm-hmm. And Riley rebuts it and says, well, you know, there's a lot of things in here that haven't materialized
yet. They're projections.
Yeah.
And so what's your position on this, the Riley versus Lopez discourse?
I was very curious that this sort of elucidation that I've just made has not been made by the Lightfoot administration. Everything I've seen reported about saying it's a pretty sure thing. It's sort of pre-approved, like a mortgage loan, you know, but they haven't talked about how common it is elsewhere, why it hasn't been done in the past, to try to sell it, which seems to me is a really, it seems like a mistake, you know.
They haven't done enough to sell what?
Sell this particular revenue package that would have cut the feet out from under Lopez of this argument. Mm.
I got to say this. I'm delighted to hear that argument come from Ray Lopez, who a frequent guest on this show. Ray Lo, if you're listening, he's come a long way. I remember when he was a rookie alderman interviewing him as a rookie alderman. I think that Ray Lo, when was that? 2015. I went down to your offices. I interviewed you. He was a babe in the woods, just been elected. And to hear him speak with such authority about the budget process, I got to tip my hat to him. He was paying attention. He's learned a lot. And I say this as an old guy to a young guy because he's a millennial. I believe that Ray Lo and I don't see eye to eye on a lot of things politically. He's more conservative than I am, but I welcome his voice. And I'll tell you why I say this, Dave. What he's saying is absolutely true. Any budget is a projection, and generally they're making the best projection possible in order to, as Ray Lo points out.
That's what Riley is saying, actually.
Well, but okay, yes. All right. So any budget is a projection, and they're putting the best spin possible on the budget so that they can claim it's balanced. And my guess is that when all is said and done, Ray Lo will be proved correct and Riley will not be proved correct. And they'll be coming back at some point in this year, just as Ray Lo is predicting, and asking for more money on the grounds that they're running low on money because they were too glowing in their projections back in November of 2019. So I think Ray Lo is correct. I think his voice is needed. I think that any voice in the Chicago City Council that points out sort of the fallacies and the tricks that mayors employ to convince us that they're balancing a budget when in fact they have no idea if the budget is balanced is welcome.
We're on the same page on this. I think both of us as lovers of democracy want to see the opposing voices made not silenced. And in the case of somebody like Ray Lopez, to do it thoughtfully and with a certain amount of knowledge that I agree he didn't seem to have before, but
he was a rookie alderman. Yeah. And so he joined the city council, I think it was 2015. So, you know,
Oh, he would know these things if he was obsessively reading my columns and listening to our discussions and our, because we've talked about this in the past, how budgets are projections, how there's such a thing as an election year projection, and then there's a post-election year projection. This budget was kind of curious. It really wasn't your typical post-election budget where the mayor has 3 years to just raise taxes and fund things. She kind of punted on this budget.
Yeah, so he's probably getting some of that stuff from your columns and from somebody who sits next to him that wasn't sitting next to him before.
Would that be Edward Burke?
That's right. He changed seats. He's sitting right next to Alderman Lopez.
Yeah. And so you're thinking that Ed Burke is explaining to this?
I'm just stating the fact that Alderman Burke now sits next to Alderman Lopez. I never used to.
Let me tell you this stuff. This is what's going on.
So let's move on to another argument that people had. Someone else who is another frequent critic of the Lightfoot administration in its short tenure is Alderman Anthony Beal of the Ninth Ward. And let's hear what he had to say.
I rise to say no to this budget. We stated that when we go to Springfield, if we didn't get what we wanted, that we would have to look at property tax. Well, we went to Springfield and we didn't get what we wanted. We got zero from what my good friend Willie Wilson says, a casino that we didn't get. Springfield asked, why didn't we do an RFP on the casino? I asked that we do an RFP, because you never know what kind of fish you might catch just by putting an RFP out there. You might have got somebody that said, just maybe we can look at doing something with the formula that was in place. A wise man in my ward told me just last night that he recalled that Harold Washington had a budget that passed December 30th at 9 o'clock at night because this body was working to balance a budget. What's the hurry if we anticipate in getting this $163 million? Well, I tell you what, if we don't get that $163 million, you all are going to be raising property taxes on the backs of our people. And then how many accolades are we going to have in this body?
So Alderman Beal makes a few points. One, he's talking about, he's reiterating the thing about the $163 million ambulance reimbursement. But the other thing I want to highlight is he's talking about the fact that Chicago didn't implement the casino or didn't put out a request for proposals for a Chicago casino as was enacted by the General Assembly.
I just want to, one more time, I cannot say this enough. Hold your thought. I just want to say this. In all due respect to Alderman Beal and all due respect to Alderman Lopez, again, I welcome any dissenting voice in the Chicago City Council. I welcome more light shed on the budget process. I welcome people going back, getting historical comparables, parables like Harold Washington, what went down.
I'm guessing that made that a favorite comment.
I welcome all that. I would just want to point out that both Raylo and Beal, like Hopkins, voted for Lincoln Yards. And when they created Lincoln Yards, folks, don't be ignorant, okay? If we're all about educating the public, what they did was they took very valuable property in a gentrifying neighborhood off the tax rolls so that it couldn't be taxed. And when they did that, they forced tax rates on everybody else to go up to pay the bills. So they voted to raise your property taxes when they created those two TIFs, Lincoln Yards and 78. They voted to raise your property taxes. Now they're coming back and saying how much they care about you and your property tax bill. So it's good to listen to what Beal and Lopez say and Oh boy, Hopkins have to say as they're looking out for your property tax on this budget. But then you have to ask them, where were you? Where were you, the vigilant defenders of our property tax bills, when it came to voting yes for Mayor Rahm's TIF at 78 and Lincoln Yards? And I just had to say that.
And okay, actually, a city council member made your point during that meeting. It was Alderman Michelle Smith of the 43rd Ward.
Reader of Ben Jarofsky's column from a long time ago.
She said, I don't remember the exact quote, and I'm sorry I don't have the clip, but she said, anyone who voted yes on Lincoln Yards should vote yes on this budget. And she did vote yes on the budget herself, by the way.
Well, I'm not quite sure.
It's a similar point. It's not the same
point. I would not phrase it that way, because I would have voted no to Lincoln Yards a million times. But I get her point. I I get her point. It is, there's some, it's like a distant cousin of the point I'm making right here. But I just, when I hear Anthony Beale, I hear Raylo, and as much as I appreciate them speaking out against this budget, I'm just reminded, Dave, about just the utter inconsistency and the hypocrisy. About,
that was the word I thought you were going to use, yeah, hypocrisy.
The utter hypocrisy of our aldermen who champion, and the Politanos in that boat too for the 41st Ward. He voted for those two TIFs. Anybody else? I think Brendan Riley voted no on the
Lincoln Yards.
On Lincoln Yards. I want to say.
I don't recall.
I can't recall. And James Gardner wasn't even there, so I can't blame him one way or the other, because he's a rookie alderman out of the 45th Ward. But just the other hypocrisy, like a tax hike is not a tax hike when it's in a TIF district, but a tax hike is a tax hike when it comes to what? Voting for more money for firefighters and police. And so it's just, I would like a little less hypocrisy and a more honesty on the part of our aldermen when they're standing up for the beleaguered property taxpayers. That's all.
Hear, hear. The other point that Alderman Beale makes is around this, as I said, the city casino. And one of the accusations he's making is that the city could have put out, all right, so here's what happened, is after the state passed the law allowing the Chicago to finally get a casino that some people have wanted for a long time, the law included an economic feasibility study that had to be done within 90 days. So I don't know who went on, out and hired this Las Vegas-based firm, but some outfit called Union Gaming Analytics found that, you know what, the tax structure is just too onerous, that whoever does this, it's just they can't make enough money. It ain't going to work. So at which point the Lightfoot administration kind of threw up their hands and said, well, you know, this we can't put out RFP for this thing. Let's go back to the General Assembly. Yeah. And this is what Beale is specifically talking about. She said, let's go back in November to the General Assembly when during their veto session and see if we can't get them to lower the taxes in that law on the casino so it can make more money. Mm-hmm. Well, right after that, of that announcement, is the chief sponsor of the... So essentially the Chicago casino law, Senator Terry Link of Waukegan said that he was skeptical. He said, quote, whoever runs it is still going to make lots of money, unquote, without changing the law. So Beale is saying, look, you didn't have to, you could have gotten this money some other way. You don't need to worry. You don't have to rely so much on other revenues like property taxes if you had actually just put this thing out for bid. And then your... colleague Robert Herguth in the Sun-Times reported that reported Mayor Lightfoot's connection to gambling interests, namely that she's received about $250,000 from relatives of a gentleman named Neil Bloom, who's a casino operator. Yeah. So these are just facts. So it's interesting that, Beale raises this.
And let's just take a moment to just take a little deeper dive in what you said. We've discussed this many times in this show. Yes, indeed, the state legislature passed a casino bill that would allocate a certain amount of money for the city of Chicago, a certain amount of money for the state of Illinois, and a certain amount of money for the operator. And then, as you said so well, the operator, this consultant report said that's not enough money for the operator, at which point Lori Lightfoot went back to Springfield to ask them to change the formula. And we've talked about this in the show many times, Dave, with Jeff Johnson and other experts or budget gurus. You know, who's going to lose? If you're going to give more money to the operator of the casino, then either the state or the city is going to lose some money on the deal. And I am with Beale on this one. I'm like, no.
Negatory.
Negatory. Anthony Beale, I'm with you on this one. Absolutely.
I should point out that even if a casino RFP had gone out, that would not have affected the 2020 budget because... they would still have to award it. There wouldn't be any operation, presumably, until the end of the year.
Well, you can make projections. Again, budgets are, they could be sneaky, and they could go, well, we project that the budget will be operating by November of 2020.
And, you know, to play devil's advocate with myself, they could put in a temporary casino in a place like, oh, I don't know, the Thompson Center.
Yes.
And, you know, and just and start to hurt the money
rolling.
I love
it when he plays devil advocate with himself. On one hand, it's like Woody Allen in Bananas, where he cross-examines himself. You remember that?
I'm hang tight, guys.
Anyway, I'm with you, Beal. Okay, I wish you could have... Oh, the bike.
That was the cash register.
Oh, that was the cash register. I'm with you, Beal. I wish you had voted no on the seven, on those two tips, but you're absolutely correct. They should have requests for... When Alderman, by the way, that's the other thing that kind of acronyms, RFPs. That's you were talking at the outset about how when you take a look at the piece of paper that says what's in the agenda, no normal human being would know what they were doing. So, you know, we're supposed to, this is supposed to be the let in the light era of transparency.
That's a great slogan.
Yeah. What? Let in the light? Yeah. Thank you. I wish I had thought about it. So,
this
you know,
little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
This little light of mine, let it shine with a piece of paper that says exactly what you're doing.
She never sang it though.
Oh yeah, she never. But I don't know. It's just like when guys get up and do the acronyms, you know, RFP. Then you should say what an RFP is. Not everybody knows what an RFP is. Sorry, man. You know, in journalism, you always have to identify, right? You know, comma, Dave Glowatz, comma, budget analyst, bike rider, and bad mother beep, and that kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? You always have to.
Gotcha.
Well, OSTFU, Jirofsky.
Let's see PT. I mean, let's see about some other aldermen's objections. Let's talk about now some of the so-called progressive aldermen and what they had to say.
So-called progressive? Let's, are you doubting that they're really progressives?
I'm just saying, you know, it's not my term. It's their term. Let's first go to the 25th alderman who was elected this year, Alderman Sigcho Lopez.
Who will be a guest on this show, I think, Friday, I want to say.
Well, let's hear him in advance.
Mr. Bike, up top, man, you are killing it, setting me up with these. Good job.
Quite frankly, this is the easiest vote I've ever taken in 4 years.
Starting out with Alderman Garza.
I hear some of my colleagues talking about an easy budget. But let me tell you that outside these walls, for Chicagoans in this city, it is not easy. Just a few days ago, one of the developers that was a beneficiary of the previous administration did not do the minimum affordable housing, was also trying to evict a 72-year-old senior in the middle of the winter. So how are we going to address the issue of affordable housing when it's not our priority? Now, understand that we don't have unlimited resources. However, we got to define our priorities. As a city council member, I got my priorities very clear because I see my constituents every day coming for resources, from Chinatown to Pilsen to the West Loop, the lack of affordable housing, the lack of resources for mental health services, and it's painful to be silent.
Before Alderman Sigcho Lopez spoke, there was a quick clip there of Alderman Sue Garza, Sedlowski Garza, of the Alderwoman Sue Sedlowski Garza.
Get it right. Get it right. The 10th Ward, come on.
Who notably said, this is the easiest budget I've ever voted for. And Sigcho Lopez said, no, this is not for me. Maybe it's for you, but it's not for me. And he talked about the fact that the budget does not include expenditures for affordable housing and mental health services that many of his constituents and many of other aldermen's constituents across the city have wanted. And notably, he is the alderman of the area called the 78 that is a beneficiary of another TIF district going in the South Loop. So he talked about some other I want to go to his tone. His tone is one of sort of I can't stomach this. I can't. He said, I will not be silent mm-hmm. on this issue. And even though someone like Sue Sedlowski Garza feels like this is a budget that works for her value-wise, Sigcho Lopez is saying the exact opposite.
Yeah.
It does not work for me value-wise.
Do you have a bit you're going to play here now?
I have more, yeah.
Okay, well, I just want to say that just to point something out, the first clips that you... were playing had to deal with
details.
No, they had to deal with the raising of the money. And now we're getting into the spending of the money. And so there's two ways to oppose. There's two general subsets of opposition to the mayor's budget. One has to deal with the raising the money. So you heard Hopkins
Beal and Lopez talking about how they think this is a burden on the property taxpayers. One more time, I'll point out that all three of them were nowhere to be found on the behalf of the property taxpayers when it came to the TIFs. But I welcome their concern about the property taxpayers and this budget. So they're concerned about the raising of the money. Now, Byron Sixer Lopez, the alderman of the 25th Ward, is protesting and criticizing the expenditure of the money, how the money is spent. And in his particular case, it's not fair or just for the city of Chicago to raise property tax dollars on people and then use the money not use the money to meet the most pressing needs that folks have. So that's essentially his criticism.
Here. Which invites a question posed by Alderman Matt Martin of the 47th Ward, that it is namely, if you want to spend more on affordable housing or mental health services, where is that money going to come from? And Martin talked a little bit about that.
Damn, you're good.
He's when good. I went to the Harvard Kennedy School of Government, they talked about how easy it is to vote no on something.
This is Alderman James Kappelman.
How much harder it is to negotiate, to get to a win-win, or at least get to a point where everyone loses a little bit. This budget does that.
Ooh, I love
with
that word.
Tremendous respect to my colleague, Alderman Kappelman, a no vote is not easy. Voting no is challenging for me and emotional as well, because communicating that vote does not, in my opinion, reflect the sort of time and effort that individuals have put into the budget. And with me personally, when you've listened to me and you've spoken candidly with me, it's not easy. And so share my frustrations with the budget. And there are frustrations that I think almost everyone I've spoken with to a T shares. Things around overtime that is rampant and unchecked with our police department and our fire department. And I want to emphasize that it's not a frustration with individuals within those particular departments. It's about this larger systems that they find themselves in, and systems that we as a broader city government are in the process of reckoning with, including the rising cost of lawsuits for officer misconduct, alleged and actual, an inadequate investment in affordable housing, especially in communities like mine, which have more resources than many, but not the sort of resources to maintain and expand affordability, which was a big reason why I'm here. Also, my frustration with our inability to bring in more progressive revenue. I think some of my no vote, to be honest, is a reflection of my own failure in terms of my inability, albeit in a short process, to put together information and to sell colleagues on some of the ideas that I mentioned earlier. So my hope is that certainly starting January 1st, if not earlier, that I'll be in a position to help effectuate these things. Because with things like the corporate head tax, I know that there are real reservations with that. And with things like pilot, with other TIF surplusing approaches, and I want to make sure that I do a better job of pitching that so that next year I'm in a position, hopefully, to vote yes.
So notice the tone of Alderman Martin there. I think it's interesting that he says part of the blame lies with myself, mm-hmm. not with the mayor, that I didn't sell these progressive revenue sources, a few of which he names. The corporate head tax, he talks about, there's another acronym for you, PILOT, which stands for Payment in Lieu of Taxes, mm-hmm. namely having large nonprofit institutions like University of Chicago Hospitals and Northwestern Hospital, who currently don't pay property taxes, to agree to a voluntary payment, which is done in places like Boston.
This is really good stuff that you have, Dave. Excellent job bringing these clips in. I'm going to talk a little bit about what Kappelman, the bit about Kappelman, James Kappelman, the alderman from the 46th Ward, which is the uptown area, just east of Matt Martin's ward, which is the 47th Ward. Even though they're in a sort of general area, the same sort of general region of the city, are widely different. What Kappelman is saying, articulating, is classic Chicago verbiage from an alderman or from a mayor, and that is anybody who dares to disagree with the official line of the city of Chicago. And this worldview goes back to the days of Richard J. Daley. Kappelman wasn't even born when Daley was articulating this, and he somehow or other it's morphed itself into him. It's as a creature. It's like, how many trees have you planted? So if anybody dares to disagree with whatever the all-powerful chief of the city of Chicago said, they're a troublemaker. They're ne'er-do-well. They never come up with any ideas. You can't get along with anybody. I remember people people saying this about the great, the legendary Leon Dupre. And let me tell you something, Kappelman. Nobody remembers the go-alongs, the cogs in the machine who do whatever the mayor tells them, no matter how dumb it is. But people remember those who had the guts to stand up to a mayor when the mayor was wrong. And I believe, I'm thinking of the vote to sell the parking meters right now. Where was it, 39 to 5, something like that?
Right, there were five against.
The five people who voted for it, proud, they wear it as a badge of courage. The 39 who went along and used rhetoric much like Kappelman used at the time, Dave, because we talked about it on our old podcast. Oh, where's your solutions? How many trees have you planted? Can't you just go along for once? Remember Mel saying, nobody reads this stuff anyway.
So you're saying that Kappelman just gave a more sugar-coated version of that.
Yes, a more sugar-coated version. He
tried
to,
genteel.
He tried to tony it up with his reference to going to some Harvard
school of government.
No, and I thought that Matt Martin was correct, and I appreciate what Matt Martin did. And he was saying, it was, yes, you're right. It was Matt Martin was saying, I'll take the blame. He was essentially saying, all of you guys, you know, ducked on this issue of implementing progressive ways to pay for government that the mayor was against. You ducked the challenge of fighting, taking on the mayor. So I'm going to take the responsibility for not doing a better job of articulating why these are good ideas. I'm going to tell you, Matt Martin, I give you credit for taking the high road by positioning it that way. But I'll tell you this right now. No matter how much sales job you do over the years, no matter how much you package it, no matter how convincing it is, if the mayor says no, the James Kappelmans of the world will not vote for it. That is the reality in the city of Chicago. Most of the aldermen, 26 of the aldermen, I would say, will pretty much follow the mayor off a cliff, which is what they've done in many cases, like the parking meter deal.
So you think Martin is tilting at windmills?
I think that Matt Martin is a gracious guy. He's a real gentleman. I'm proud to say that he's my alderman. He's been on the show several times, and he's putting the best spin possible on that you could put on this situation. I do not believe, and I hope, prove me wrong, City Council, but I do not believe in any, no matter how convincing Matt Martin is, no matter how passionate he is, no matter how much evidence he unveils to show how it's more fair to bring back the head tax or to have pilot or one of our favorites, the LaSalle Street tax. You and I have talked about that for years. All these other progressive ways to raise money to fund the things that we need in the city of Chicago. I feel the forces that are against that, the corporate interests that are against that, have so much clout with Mayor Lightfoot that she would not entertain him, just like Mayor Rahm would not entertain him, just like Mayor Richard M. Daley would not entertain it. And it doesn't matter what an alderman says to try to convince them. If the mayor says no, 26 aldermen at least will, follow her.
So many people believe that in this last election of how many new aldermen were there? There were 12?
Maybe right.
13. So anyway, some low teens number that there was enough new blood on the city council to essentially negate what you were saying, that they then themselves form a block and could get enough other people to participate that would enable them to take an agenda that a mainstream mayor like Lightfoot would not necessarily cotton to and be able to push it over. But you think that's a pipe dream in this
administration? Well, it was 11. I mean, listen, if you do the breakdown, and this is going into the weeds, but if you do the breakdown to make the point that you made earlier, there were, I think, six aldermen of the Democratic Socialist persuasion who would not be afraid, who'd be like Matt Martin being one of them, who would not be afraid to stand up to the mayor on issues of taxes. And then there are aldermen like Lopez and Beal who are more conservative in their outlook, but they have found themselves in this position somehow or other of being outspoken, independent-minded critics of the way Lori Lightfoot is running her budget and running her city. And so, and that's it. You know, that's where we're at. We're at 11. We're at 11 in the city council, and there's it's a 50-person body, so you need 26 yes votes. So we're far away from that. I think we're better off, and we're in a healthier state Dave, definitely, than we were, let's say, in 2009 or whenever it was that they voted 39-5 on the parking meter deal. I guess there would be 11 no votes to that parking meter deal. If, by the way, I think Beal was voted for the parking meter
deal,
if I'm correct. Yeah. Yes, Beal.
Well, you know, I know you know the five that, because yeah. You had to name them recently.
Yes, I had to. Our next guest, I love when my guests show up early. I'd like to think that we're in a better position because we had 11 that voted no for whatever reason. A principled opposition. I tend to think it's healthier if you have principled opposition in a city like Chicago, which the problem, my general problems with in the city of Chicago is not what Kappelman's getting at, that people say no. My general issue in the city of Chicago is that all too many people just do whatever they're told. And never dare to raise a question, never dare to challenge a mayor, never dare to question a budget report, go along with whatever TIF deal is put in front of them.
Which invites the question, and this will be my last point, is what retribution do aldermen fear when they say no in these situations? And some of the aldermen who were naysayers during the Emanuel administration, like Sedlowski Garza, like Wagaspak, are now yay-sayers. But one of the last things that one of the last people to speak on the budget before the passage of it was Alderman Wagaspak, who is the finance chair and the 32nd ward alderman, and this is what he had to say.
Let's see what Scotty says.
Whether you vote against this budget or for it, you should have no fear in your choice. You should have no fear that a city worker is not going to do their job as they have in the past. Streets and sand workers will still get out there and do their job. Police and fire will still do their job. Our workers in forestry, family services, and every department will continue to do their job, regardless of how you vote today.
All right, I must address this. I have to say this. As much as I love Scott Wagaspak, he's been on the show many times, I disagree with him, and I've used his ward as an example. In the entire history of the city of Chicago, in this century, and I'm looking at my next two guests, they can think about what I'm about to say and challenge me if they want, but in the entire history of the city of Chicago since 2000, no ward has been punished because its alderman voted against the mayor's budget. And I say that Mayor Rahm, I was no fan of him. And Mayor Daley, I was no fan of him. This is a myth that aldermen put up to justify their cowardice and their failure to stand up to a mayor. And I did the challenge in 2000, and this relates to you, Dave, because it had to do with bike riding. And this is one of my favorite little stories. I was sitting having dinner with a dear friend of mine who lives in Scotty Wagaspak's ward, and he says he loves Scotty Wagaspak, even if he does vote against the mayor's budget, but he's paying for it because the streets are so unpaved, okay? So this dude, who I love dearly, thought that the streets of the 32nd ward were unpaved because Scotty Wagaspak dared to vote against Mayor Rahm's budget. At which point I said to him, obviously you're not a bike rider in the city of Chicago. You cannot ride down Damon Street in the city of Chicago and not go through potholes, over potholes, huge gaps. You don't know what ward you're in. You could be in the ward of Pat O'Connor, who was the mayor's floor leader. You could be in the ward of Scotty Wagaspak, who was his greatest critic. You wouldn't Joe Moore, who was the greatest yes vote that Mayor Rahm had. And you wouldn't know. It's the inability of the city of Chicago to come up with the money to pave its streets is the problem. It's not the aldermen's being punished.
So one must wonder what motivates Wagaspak to talk like this. I imagine a few possibilities. One is that he understands this perception, like the one that you talked about just now.
Yeah.
But another thing is he doesn't enunciate the idea that there will be retribution in some form. And I'll tell you exactly what happened right after this vote was taken. Reportedly, the mayor had a little pizza party for the aldermen, but the only ones who could come were the ones who voted yes on the budget. That's not such a big deal, but it sends a message.
It does
send
a message.
Right? Why not have the pizza party for everybody?
It's pretty petty. I call that petty.
But the next thing that happened is that the mayor has a political action committee, one for her own campaign and one to give money to other candidates that she likes. And the campaign for the latter reportedly started putting up the names of the people who voted no on the budget. And provided a link, so anybody who said who wanted to give them grief about that, they could go and follow through in a link and send them, harass them on social media about it. So it's already begun.
I listen. That's a different point, and I'll concede that absolutely. It was the same way with Mayor Rahm. If you vote no to mayor's budget, that mayor will probably be against you and will run someone against you. Mayor Rahm was always trying to round up someone to run against Scotty Wagasback and was always ready to give money to somebody to run against Scotty Wagasback because he voted against his budget. That's different than saying that a forestry worker will not come out to your ward to trim your trees.
Which is exactly my point. So Wagasback either didn't occur to him, the point I'm making didn't occur to him, or he doesn't believe it. My question is, I'm moving sometimes. I want to focus on government operations, but the politics is very interesting. I think many of us were led to believe there would be a politics of collaboration in the Lightfoot administration. I think there's some questions here.
Lori, I saw the same article. Follows articles. Lori Lightfoot does not play. Okay, so it's the people who voted against her budget, they're going to know about it. She's got this PAC. If you look at the PAC, if you click on it, you'll see something like, it'll say, like if you click on, let's say, old boy Byron Sixel Lopez's name, it'll say he voted against this progressive budget that was going to correct all the problems that humanity has ever faced shame on him. If you click on Ed Burke's name, you'll say, Ed Burke voted for this great triumphant budget. He's a hero to the people. So it is interesting. Hey, man, that's Chicago politics. I understand it. So if you're an alderman and you want to go through life unopposed by a powerful mayor, you vote for his or her budget. But you should not go take it the next step and say the city of Chicago is so organized they're not going to pave your streets. You should not blame it on your resident. You say, I'm going to capitulate to this powerful mayor, vote for this stupid program that he or she wants, like selling off the parking meters, because I'm worried about my streets being paved. I do not believe any mayor I don't think they're capable of figuring
Wagasback
it out.
Wagasback is my alderman, so I'll take it up with him at the next ward night.
You better be nice to Scotty, all right? He won't pave your streets. All right. His name is Dave Gloatz. He's done an outstanding job. Is there a round of applause thing?
Oh, Dave, that was that noise. Tell everybody where people can find you and what you want the people to know.
Find my reporting at Inside Chicago Government. That's shygov.com on your web. On Facebook, go to facebook.com/insidegov. That's Inside GOV. And on Twitter, CHIGOVT.
That's correct.
All right. The great Lori Glenn and Juanita Irizarry are on deck. Can't wait to bring them on. Two of my favorite guests. When I said that to Lori Glenn, she goes, you say that to everybody. No, I only say it to Lori. All right.
They're coming.
Thank you for I didn't say it to him. We'll be right back after this.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
Hey, everybody. What you're about to hear are the piano stylings of Jeff Manuel. Man, listen to Jeff go. Jeff Manuel has been playing piano around Chicago for years. He's played for conventions, for celebrities, played in basement bars with blues bands. He's played at prestigious social clubs, fine restaurants, and in the intimacy of private homes. Book Jeff Manuel at jeffemanuelpianist.com. Don't worry, I'll spell his name at the end of this commercial. You know what Chicago Magazine said? They said that Jeff Manuel is, quote, as comfortable with Chopin as he is with Cole Porter. He's excellent and his performance is joyous. He offers an elegant stream of compositions and interpretations that entertains the mind but won't hurt the ears. To hear more of Jeff Manuel's work and to book Jeff for your next event, go to jeffmanuelpianist.com. I'm going to spell it out for you people. J-E-F-F. M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, U, E, L, P, I, A, N, I, S, T .com. Take it away, Jeff Manuel.